You're listening to the Jason Greger Show, presented by PlayAlberta.ca, Alberta's only regulated online gambling website. Use the promo code, and you get a new one every month, Greger50, and you'll get a free $50 play only at PlayAlberta.ca.
Good evening. How are you doing today?
Doing great, Connor. How are you, Matt?
Doing really good. And, of course, we're getting closer and closer to the fantasy football season getting going here. Preseason tonight, so lots of players to watch out for. Now, this year, how many leagues are you in so far?
Well, if we're going to go back to February when I started drafting a best ball draft, it'll be multiple. It'll be well over 100 drafts that matter that I'll be drafting in the next month that are my redraft and dynasty leagues. That'll be about 30.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, every game there's somebody to watch out for, you're cheering for, and then that player might be crushing you in another league.
And cheering against both, yes. I
love it. Good for the content game. So with the NFL preseason going tonight, obviously we had the Hall of Fame game last week, but the Raiders taking on the Seahawks. And now one of the players I want to start out with was the first running back off the board in the NFL draft. Ashton Jeanty out of Boise State goes to the Raiders. Now they bring in Geno Smith. I think that's going to help him out quite a bit. Brock Bowers, another option there. But when it comes to Jeanty at the running back position, what are your expectations for him?
High volume. And look, that's what we're looking for, like in all fantasy options, but especially the running back position. Volume opportunities are the primordial sludge from which all fantasy scoring rises. Nothing happens without the football in your hands. In Jeanty's case, he's going to have it in his hands a lot. We know that Chip Kelly brought in as the offensive coordinator by the new head coach, Pete Carroll, formerly with the Seahawks, will go run heavy. I mean, that's been his, that, you know, like he was thought as a really innovative offensive mind early in his time in the NFL, yet still in Philadelphia, had LeSean McCoy, led the league in yards from scrimmage, went on to San Francisco at one point. Carlos Hyde, a bit of a journeyman, turned into a 1,000-yard or nearly a 1,000-yard rusher under his tutelage. I expect them to just feed Jeanty, who will remind you that in the game of tackle football, guys who break tackles are very good. Nobody in college football broke tackles like Ashton Jeanty last year, and I would expect that to carry over. Just get a huge workload. Those are the kind of, you know, anchor players we want on our rosters, those guys that are just going to get that dominant workload and carry you each week, to have a high floor, and also a very high ceiling if they hit the end zone on occasion. So love Ashton Jeanty in this offense.
Now, just sticking with the Raiders in the tight end position, Brock Bowers was outstanding last year. I mean, if it's not for the quarterback bias, I thought he was rookie of the year. He was that good. When you look at the tight end position in that top tier, who is with Bowers there this season?
Well, it's Trey McBride in terms of anticipated volume, right? And again, like all positions, But I think the thing about Bowers, what I might not like, and some of the things that I watch out for in fantasy, is players coming off historic seasons. They're historic for a reason. They rarely happen. So expecting a true repeat, is it possible? Yes. It's not on the most likely end of the range of possible outcomes, but it is possible. He is essentially the Raiders' de facto wide receiver one, and that's not going to change. But putting up those high-end numbers, so you have a player like Trey McBride, how do we see a path to more value for him? He has a dominant workload as well. He'll be, if not the most targeted, the second most targeted option in the Cardinals offense. But he only had the 2 touchdowns last year. So there's what we like to call positive touchdown regression, meaning, hey, that's just going to come around, right? At some point, you get all those opportunities, scores are going to happen. You saw the Cardinals trying to force the ball in his hands last year. I think the value lies in a guy like George Kittle, though. Both Bowers and McBride, you might have to pay a second-round draft pick for. Maybe McBride slips into the third. George Kittle, you might get in the third, fourth, sometimes the fifth round, depending on who you go for. And in games where he stays in the locked and upright position for the majority of the season, let's say 14 games or more, he's going to be a top 5 tight end. Last year, he was tight end 1 in points per game, so which matters. Not total points, didn't play as many games, had a little bit of an issue. But in an offense in San Francisco this year where we're not really sure what the receiving core is going to look like at the moment, we've got Brandon Ayuk coming off a torn ACL. Not sure when he'll return. Like, I like Juwan Jennings, who's going to handle a pretty heavy workload in that receiving core, and Ricky Pearsall. But, you know, they're not like what you would call super high-end options, I don't think, in just general NFL terms. So I think Kittle's in a really good spot. And if you miss out on that tier, there's a ton of depth at the position that you can feast on all the way out to when you're drafting your tight end twos. Right now, Pat Freiermuth of the Steelers is going as the 24th tight end off the board. Zach Ertz, somewhere in that same range. He was tight end 11 last year playing with Jaden Daniels. So a lot of value across the board at the tight end position if you miss out on that top tier.
Bob, you don't have to go too in-depth on this one, but a name that I feel like people are still kind of enamored with, and it comes up every once in a while, Kyle Pitts. So what do you believe Kyle Pitts will look like this season?
I believe Kyle Pitts will probably look like what he has looked like, but the talent is there. The skill set is there. One of my concerns with him, and without getting too far off the rails, they're working him a lot at wide receiver. I don't know if that's a great opportunity to create the kind of mismatches that a talented tight end can create against safeties and linebackers. We'll see. I'm not hopeful, but you're not having to pay a ton for him. You're paying tight end two and for people in a 12-team league outside the top 12. And if you want to take a shot on the talent, you can always move on if it doesn't work out. You're not paying the exorbitant price to land him.
Bob Harris from SiriusXM Fantasy joining us here on the Jason Greger Show. Connor Halley sitting in today. Any questions, get him in, 1-833-401-1440. Bob, when you look at the wide receiver position, I would have Ja'Marr Chase as my wide receiver number one, but Justin Jefferson has to be in that category. How much do you factor in quarterback play when you're looking at wide receivers?
So I have let me pull my soapbox out, Connor. I'm going to stand on this one.
Okay.
Less than ideal quarterback situation should not scare you off very talented wide receivers. Look back to last year, Malik Nabers playing with four quarterbacks. Only one of whom you could probably name. I can name all four, but Daniel Jones was the top quarterback on his list. We can take beyond that. Brian Thomas Jr., the other talented rookie, down the stretch last year was the wide receiver one in points per game over the final 3 weeks playing with Mac Jones. This goes back over the course of time. We can go back to Bryce Young's rookie season in Carolina when he was one of the worst, statistically speaking, quarterbacks we've seen in a long time. Yet Adam Thielen was a wide receiver one for fantasy purposes. The wide receiver 12 over the first portion of the season finished as wide receiver 18. So I don't want to overstate the case that not having a great quarterback can diminish a wide receiver. Justin Jefferson is another example of this. We can go back 2 years ago, 2023, Kirk Cousins blew out his Achilles. Justin Jefferson returned from a hamstring injury in week 14, playing with Jaren Hall, Josh Dobbs, Nick Mullins. He was wide receiver three over that stretch in all of fantasy. So he can get the job done. The offensive ecosystem in Minnesota is really good. Kevin O'Connell, the head coach, does wonders with quarterbacks. I'm not sure what Kevin McCarthy is going to be, but I'm thinking he can be better than, Jaren Hall. And if so, Justin Jefferson is going to be just fine. If I'm getting a discount, I'm looking for opportunities to get discounts. You might see him last a little longer in the first round than you normally would have based on fears of the quarterback situation. If that's the case, I'm going to pounce on it.
Now, Giants quarterbacks last year, DeVito, Locke, I don't know who the fourth is.
Tommy Boyle.
Malik Nabers, I had on the team and I was like, oh, I love this guy. They just kept throwing to him. So you're right. That's actually a really good point there. And if anyone who might be worried about Justin Jefferson, don't worry about it. Now, how about Brian Thomas Jr. going into year two with the Jags? Where do you like him?
Oh, I like him an awful lot. I think he's going at a reasonable price. You're finding him like early in round two in 12-team drafts and PPR leagues, point per reception. I think that's about right. He might slide up into the end of the first round. The issue with this year's first round is there are six running backs going in the first round. Bijan Robinson, Saquon Barkley, Gibbs from Detroit, Derrick Henry, Jenty, and Christian McCaffrey has wormed his way back into the first round. So some of these really talented wide receivers like Brian Thomas Jr., like Nico Collins, who, by the way, in Houston was wide receiver two over the first five games of the season before he got hurt. Wide receiver two playing with C.J. Stroud, who is not there playing at a high level also. So I think, there's a lot of value there. I like Brian Thomas Jr. as a big play threat. I think a lot of people are intrigued by his new receiving mate there, Travis Hunter. We'll see how that plays out. I wonder, he's going at a very high fantasy cost. You're going to have to draft him as your third receiver, going about wide receiver 32 in the overall hierarchy. And he's going to be a big play threat. But this is what the Jacksonville Jaguars are doing under Liam Cohen and with James Gladstone as the general manager. They're looking for big play players. Brian Thomas is always going to be that, always a breakaway threat, and I think he's going to be a solid year. I think he might be a little bit of a value going early in round two.
Bob Harris joining us here on the Greger Show, talking a little fantasy football. We had this one come in essentially asking, of players that you expect to go in the first two rounds, is there anyone you're a little weary of?
I'm leery of all of them, but you have to draft somebody, right? That's the thing, especially in the first round. You can Let's not to oversimplify, but you're not going to lose your draft if your first round pick, your league if your first round pick doesn't deliver as expected. But it's a heck of a lot easier to win if he does. Said Saquon Barkley last year, said Jamar Chase last year, said every year there are players that do that. So I do think, it's important. If I'm concerned about some players who may not get the job done, you could have some concerns about Christian McCaffrey coming off the injury year. In the second round, I'm a little concerned about Josh Jacobs. It was so touchdown dependent in Green Bay. I'm not sure that Bucky Irving in Tampa Bay can repeat last season. He's going to start off with a diminished offensive line. So there are people I'm worried about. Look, we can make an argument that Puka Nacua now playing with Davante Adams. We saw what Garrett Wilson's numbers did. They took a nosedive when Davante Adams showed up in New York. I don't think that's going to be the case with Nacua, but he's never been the touchdown guy in that offense. Davante Adams has always been the touchdown guy in whatever offense he's in. So that's going to be an interesting one. But Nacua, you've seen him slide too as well. You might get him in the second round, and I think that's a great value. I'm not going to flee that scene either. So I'm pretty comfortable through the first two rounds. Maybe A.J. Brown, I'm a little worried about the passing volume with Saquon Barkley in Philadelphia. Jalen Hurts threw more than 100 fewer passes last year, attempts, than he did the year before when there was no Saquon Barkley. If that volume continues to be limited, as good as A.J. Brown is, just not going to get the kind of opportunities we like. He's not going to get up there in the 100 catch or more range. So that's a little bit of a concern for me.
Now, on the flip side, any sleepers you might be able to pick up in the later rounds that you think could have breakout campaigns or, I guess, even bounce back?
Yeah, I think there's a whole universe of running backs that are going probably later than they should in drafts, like in the fourth, fifth, sixth round even. Kenneth Walker III is a guy in Seattle. The Clint Kubiak offense that comes in there, the wide zone, the outside zone scheme is ideally suited. If you go back and listen to everything Clint Kubiak said from the day he got there about feeding Kenneth Walker the ball till this week, talking about feeding Kenneth Walker the ball, I think he's a great play. Some of the other running backs going in that same range, I think people are giving up on Alvin Kamara. People, there's nothing else there. Don't give up on him. Chuba Hubbard's another running back who there's not another prime option coming in there. If we want to go later, some of the backfields I'm looking at are what we like to call the ambiguous backfields, where we're not exactly sure how it's going to play out, but the players, the options are so cheap, you can take some shots on guys. In Dallas, you've got Javonte Williams, the rookie Jaden Blue, and Miles Sanders all going very late into the double-digit rounds in drafts. You can take a chance on one and hope it works out. I'm taking a chance on Jaden Blue a lot. Why? I'm using the Sesame Street system of fantasy football. One of these things is not like the others. And Jaden Blue is smaller, but much quicker, has a lot more speed than Javonte Williams and Miles Sanders. In Jacksonville, you've got a handful of running backs. Tank Bigsby, Travis Etienne, the rookie Bashaul Tuten, who also a huge big playmaking threat. If any of those guys ended up getting the bulk of the workload, you're going to get more out of them than the price you're paying. So if you want to take a shot on one of those guys, I think that's perfectly fine. And there's a ton of receiver depth late. I mentioned Adam Thielen before. Still goes into double-digit rounds every year. I know they have new pieces. I don't think he's done playing. And you'll find a lot of players like that. What I'm looking for are players with primary roles or at least robust roles who are going past the 10th round, and there's a ton of them.
Now, one last question. It might be a little obscure, but when you're looking at, fantasy, long-term dynasty, keeper leagues, anyone who you think might have a little bit of a slow start to their career but could pay off in seasons 2, 3, 4?
That's usually going to be like why. I mean, we could look at last year's wide receivers as an example. Who everyone was drafting Malik Neighbors was what? Sometimes a third of those receivers off the board after Roma Dunze, and definitely after Marvin Harrison. Mm-hmm. Looking at some of those guys who are coming on a little bit. So maybe looking at some of the second year receivers or some of the players that didn't quite get it done or didn't quite live up to expectations last year. The receiver position takes more time to develop. So I'd be looking at some of those players who may be disappointed last year. And also, when they do, don't be afraid to target them in trades. Players are going to be, investors are going to be, disappointed. Don't be afraid to leverage that with trades and make some offers, maybe even a little lowball offers, knowing that the investors are going to be a little bit disappointed, and try and feast on those values.
Bob, thanks so much for doing this today. We really do appreciate it. Have a great show tonight.